नमः ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूतले श्रीमद् भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिन् हरि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रजारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणी श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे आश्चर्यवल् पश्यति कश्चिदेनम् आश्चर्यवल् वदति तथैव चान्यहम् आश्चर्यवल् चैनम् अन्यशृणोति श्रुत्वाप्येनम् वेदनश्चैव कश्चिल्. We started that yesterday and we finished it. Hado va prapsasi surgam jitva va bokshase mahim tasmat uttishta kaundeya yuddhaya kratanishchayam. That's where we finished yesterday, isn't it? So, this was the important verse. Ascharyaval pashyadi kaschidenam. What is interesting about that is... if you see an object which is far away from you, if you have not seen that, it is not a great surprise, isn't it? Something which is far away from you, your eyes cannot get there. You can't see that object. So it's not a surprise at all. But when, you know, scientists go and research and do experiments and they say that they found a new planet some light years away, thousands of light years away, so far away, they find it out. And they feel surprised by that, isn't it? When they find a new planet somewhere else, they say that, just like the astronomers and the scientists, they conduct experiments and come out with new revelations like that. So they keep on inquiring, and they all the time they are finding out new planets and new destinations. Same thing, people who are researching in the sea, they go underneath the water and they also find many amazing things underneath the water, isn't it? Just like the astronomers, and they find new planets. Similarly, those who are researching underneath the sea, underwater research, they also find something interesting all the time, new things they come out with. 10,000 feet deep sea diving and deep sea research, they call it, and they come out with new ideas. So much research work they are doing, this intelligence, human intelligence, is engaged in so much research work. But they have completely forgotten something which is so close to them. What is that? The soul. Isn't it? Something which is so close to them, they have not been able to locate it yet. They have found something which is far, far away and which is so very much underneath the water, deep thing. They've gone and located all that. But they couldn't find something which is so close to them. Ascharyaval pashyadi kaschidenam. That is the answer to that. Isn't it? Such big men, big intelligence and big research work, so much involvement in all that. And when they find something, they feel so excited about it. And they come out with such remarks saying that we have found this new planet in this universe and millions of light years away and all kinds of things, they make claims out of it. And same thing when they do the underwater research or they go to the Arctic, Antarctic, in the big desert, everywhere they're doing research. And they come out with replies saying that we have found this new thing out in this planet, and they become totally excited and they tell us about it. But something which is very the closest to them, it is so close, nothing can be more closer than that to us, than the soul. And they still haven't found that out. Ascharyaval pashyadi kaschidenam. That's what this verse is talking about. The interesting part, this is it not amazing, Krishna is saying, that something is so close, they have not been able to get any hold on to that. That this is the human intelligence. This is the human intelligence. Sometimes older people, you can notice this particularly, they'll keep their glasses on the nose and they'll be looking for the glass, where have I left it? Because the mind sometimes reacts in that way, isn't it? It is like that, the situation with the soul also. That soul is so close by that sometimes the husband is asking the wife, where have I left my glasses? And in certain situations, it can even end up in divorce because of the argument where the glass has been left. Because of the argument can happen to such an extent. When the wife says to the husband, what you are asking, you have kept the glasses on your nose and you are asking for the glasses, where do I find it then? So, like that. why I'm saying that example is that soul is, because of the soul, it's like a glass, isn't it? Through the presence of the soul, only we are seeing the world. Even that we are forgetting that point. Because of the presence of the soul, the senses are functioning. The mind is working. Intelligence is working. Everything is working because of the presence of the soul. So, keeping that glass there, and still we are looking for the glass, where is it? So, somebody asked a great sage, have you seen God? He says, I only see God, nothing else. I am seeing you also because of God's presence. Otherwise, I couldn't see you. So, in the Bhagavatam, if you look, when Vasudev saw Krishna first time in the prison, if you look into Vasudev's prayers to Krishna, there is a word there, Kevalana Bhavananda Kevalananda Sudve Vijidosi Bhava. Vasudev says to Krishna that this experience is Krishna's nature. That means the experience of the soul, that is how you know Krishna's presence inside. So long as we are feeling I am the presence of me within me, in other words, my existence, all the time we feel that, isn't it? That experience is Krishna's experience. Vijidosi Bhava, Vasudeva says like this. And the closest object is Krishna to us. Individually, who is closest to us? It is Krishna. And we, without noticing this, this object, many lifetimes we have been wandering around, not knowing His presence in us, and wandering, and eventually when we find Him, that He was here so closely to us, Ascharyaval Pashyadi Kaschidenam. So, such a simple thing, and to find out, we had to put so much effort into it, isn't it? Just like you can hold the nose like this, you can hold it like this also, isn't it? Touch the nose. So, more or less, you can find it directly in the straightforward way, but if you tell somebody, they say, so it's such a difficult thing, that the thing called soul exists within you, within everyone, because of the material existence, samsaram. Samsaram means material existence. Material existence. Kamam, krodham, lobham, moham, madam, malsaryam, the different kinds of anarthas as they are referred to. So, therefore, we have to cross all that. They ask us, isn't it? We should tell people, oh, I got so many impurities inside. They say, lust, anger, greed, and things like that, isn't it? There are the impurities inside. So people say, I've got all these impurities, how can I, when am I going to get out of all these things before I realize the truth? People will say like this, isn't it? The fact is this, there's an interesting story about this, that there was one guru and he had many disciples. So, the guru was teaching them a lot of things. The disciples were saying that, it is too very hard for us to accept all everything what you are saying. It is so difficult and all that. They were saying to him like that. So, one day the guru says to him, we have been studying so much. Let's do some, play some game today. Give up all these things, he says. So, they played a particular game on that day. The game was like this, that there were two walls at a distance about 20 or 30 meters between the distance between the walls. And he said to one of the disciples, "We'll tie your eyes with a cloth so that you can't see anything. You should start from one wall and walk to the another wall. And all the way, we'll keep some pillows at different places. You should not touch any pillow. And without touching any pillow, you should start from this wall and get to the other wall. And if you get there without touching any pillow, you're one." So this is like the children's game, you know, one of those games they devised like this. So one disciple, his eyes were tied and he stood to start the game. And before they tied the cloth on his eyes, they put a lot of pillows everywhere, all around the way. So he kept looking which way I have to go and all that. In his mind he was making some idea. So he stood there. When they tied the cloth on his eyes, and when he was standing there, the guru told other disciples to take away all the pillows now, he says. So they took away all the pillows, and he started. The disciples started from the other end. So he was keeping every step, one after the other, very carefully, not to touch the pillows. And with a lot of difficulty, he kept going, crossing each place. He made sure that he wasn't touching any pillow, because there was no pillows there. So when he got to the wall, he felt victorious and he looked back, and they took his cloth off, and he found there was no pillows anywhere. Every pillows were taken out from there. The idea was that the guru wanted to tell him that these things called anartha or impurities are there because you have identified with them in the first instance. Strictly speaking, these things don't exist in the soul. In the soul, those things don't exist. But because of our identification, if you think it is there, it's there. All the anarthas. If you think it is there, it is there. But if you think it is not there, it is not there. That's how they are. Most of the things, it's in our own mind. Many of these things have originated from. Because it's too much identification with the mind, and acting on a mental platform creates all these illusions. These are part of the illusions. Kamam, krotham, lobham, moham, they are coming from illusion. They are not a product of the soul. They are a product of maya, isn't it? So maya is like that. Then, and then he finds eventually that when he realizes the truth, he realizes these things didn't exist. Today we are saying all these things exist. But when self-realization happens, then you realize that these things didn't exist. And that is what makes him surprised at that moment. He feels amazed by that. Ascharya valpashari kashchidenam. That when he realizes the truth, he thinks these things didn't exist. This was all I have created myself within. In reality, they don't exist. But I have created myself within because of the identification with the body and other things. And then he talks about it. Ascharival vadadi tadhaiva janya. He also talks about, oh, it's an amazing thing, he says. The point is, Ascharival vadadi. Krishna never spoke to Arjuna about this till now, all through his life. Never spoke about the soul like this, isn't it? Because Arjuna was not prepared. That was the reason, to take the message seriously. Only at this point, as we saw before, that Arjuna was willing to listen. That stage has come. And that is the reason it says here, Ascharival Vadadi, that unless you are ready to receive the message, it's no point in speaking to him about the soul. Unless one is ready to hear. That readiness is important. That's what Krishna says in the beginning. Shishyasteham Shadhimam Tvam Prapannam. Isn't it? Tvam Prapannam. That surrender is the point when this message will get in. Up to that point, this message won't get in. On an intellectual level, so many discussions you can have about the soul. But the message will really impact on a person at that point when sharanagati or surrender is there in a person's mind. Then, first that mental preparation. mental preparation. Only after the mind is ready, or so in other words, consciousness, in other words, mind is ready to accept the message, that some people understand, some people don't understand. That example, even in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Krishna was speaking Bhagavad Gita, many people are thinking, what's all this philosophy being spoken here in the battlefield? Isn't it? They were thinking, what is the point in discussing all this philosophy here in the battlefield? You see, so many people heard Bhagavad Gita. They also could not understand the need, because they were not ready for it. They were not ready for it. They were all not having the same state of mind like Arjuna. Arjuna's mind was ready, or in other words, inside Arjuna was ready to receive the message. That was his position. And then they may have thought, why all this philosophy is discussed now? So Krishna said at the very end, isn't it? At least from the point of view of Swadharma, from Dharmam, this battle should be fought. You should fight the war. And Krishna also told him that this is a good fortune you have got as a Kshatriya, that you got an opportunity to fight. And by fighting this, you will Swargadwaram Vavratam. You will go to the heavenly planets if you lose the battle. Isn't it? A door has been opened for you to a higher position. And if you win the war, you are benefited. If you lose the war, still you are benefited. In either way. Hadova Prapsisi Swargam. If you lose the battle, you will go to the heavenly planets. Jitvava Bhokshase Mahim. That if you win the battle, you can enjoy this world completely under your control. Tasmal uttishta kaunteya. Therefore, wake up. Yuddhaya kratanischaya. To fight this war. Krishna says there, isn't it? Now, as I mentioned before, this verse is karma prairagam. Karma prairagam means it encourages to engage in karmam. Isn't it? Engage in karmam. Karma vasanas are like this. Karma vasana's nature, we must always understand the nature of karma vasana. That every karma we do, it creates an impression inside. Isn't it? It creates an impression inside. That it's like a recording. It goes on inside. With every karma what we do, it goes on to be recorded inside. Here also, if we engage in different activities, different emotions are created within us, isn't it? With each different kinds of work, what we do. So, say for example, if we got upset with someone, immediately a line is drawn inside. A line is drawn inside. And the name of that, it is known as vritti. It is called vritti. Again, if we got angry with that same person again, what will happen? That line will get a little bit stronger. Little bit stronger. Say you have to live with people sometimes, or, you know, in family relationships, or you can notice yourself these things happening, or in the office, for example. Once you know somebody is a trouble for you, what you do? You keep away, isn't it? Or try to avoid the dealings as much as possible. So, once a line is drawn, first instance, you have that some emotion has been created. Vigaram it's called. In a relationship with someone, it becomes a thin line. If it happens again, the line gets thicker. And if it happens many times, the line becomes so thick, it is not anymore a vritti. Vritti turns into what is known as vasana. Vritti turns into vasana. So, that at that time vritti gets life. Up to that time it was only a line, but it starts getting life at that point. When it gets life, it is called a samskaram. It becomes a samskaram in a person. So every time after that, when you see that person, you get angry. Even if he hasn't done anything, still you feel some kind of uneasiness, isn't it? It is inside there. It may not come out. You're trying to keep it under check. But the feeling doesn't go away. it has, something has happened in the past a few times, once, twice, thrice, doesn't matter. But the strong feeling inside is very much there. So you keep a little strong face and you stay like that. So sometimes in some houses, I'm not saying every house, but some houses, there'll be fight in the morning. Have you noticed? I'll be arguing about something, issues, I'll be going on, either for a place in the bathroom or whatever that is happens there. And they will, it becomes a regular thing at the house all the time. And in some houses it's in the evening. They'll come and they'll fight each other, they get drunk or fight or whatever they do all that. And every evening there's fight. Next day morning, everything sober again. But what happens? After a while, this becomes a habit that they have to fight in the evening. For some reason or the other, they'll fight and there'll be a fight in the evening. Or fight in the morning, whichever time. And then you start wondering, when this person was fighting in the evening, when you see him in the next morning, you think, is this the same person I saw last night who was fighting with such a firepower? Where is all that gone? Now he looks very sober and very peaceful. But in the evening comes, he changes his nature again. So, what does that mean? That means he has come to a samskaram stage now. That anger inside has developed into a samskaram. It's not that he is doing it deliberately. But when that time comes, he has become a slave of that. Just like coffee drinking. If you get used to drinking coffee, at that time, if you don't get the coffee, then you feel a little uneasy about that, isn't it? So, all the vritti will eventually turn out to be a samskaram if it is not taken care of from the very beginning. It will turn out into be a samskaram. And what happens is, if it becomes a samskaram in a person, it is through that samskaram you see the world. You will see the world through that samskaram. That's why, because everyone's samskaram is different, when something happens, everyone sees it in a different way. Because of the samskaram inside. The same incident, five people will see in five different ways. Some people say, oh, it's nothing serious, just ignore it. What is there? After all, so many people are going on in this world in different ways, it's nothing much to take note of. Another person will say, oh, no, he shouldn't have done that. It's wrong what he has done. Any incident like that, we become very critical of it, isn't it? And degree of criticism varies. And same thing, same problem, five different people will interpret in five different ways. One person says, there is nothing seriously wrong about that. Another person says, no, it's absolutely wrong. This is not what we were instructed. So when you start thinking like this, you can see it is a samskaram in a person that's causing that. I can give you several examples and you can also give me several examples on this. One issue comes up in an organization and you notice that some people goes with the management. Management says like this, they say, management is decided like this, there's nothing wrong, it should be okay. Another person says that, well, this is not our, Guru Maharaj has said that he should not be like this. He has, if you read his books, you will find that it is against the teachings, against his teachings. And it is wrong to do what they are doing now. Another person says like that. A third person says that, well, management has decided like that. What can I do? One person goes with the management, saying that they have made the right decision. Another person says it's totally against the principle what the Acharya has told us to do. This is completely goes against that. A third person says, what I can do, I'll just go along with it, whatever they decide. So, three, four different versions you find, and some people say, well, what they are doing is wrong, but I won't do anything to upset the management, I'll go along with it. So, like this, all sorts of different opinions comes from different sources, isn't it? This is where, why is this happening? Because each one of them has developed a certain samskaram inside. And he is seeing things like that. He's seeing, you'll be amazed how people can react to different situations. you could even imagine in your mind that they can move so far away from their you may think that, well, how could you do that? How could you agree with such a thing? But they agree. Why they agree? Because the samskaram is different inside. This, I don't want to personalize it, because if you personalize it, it doesn't look good. But you have to think yourself about this point, because practical experience, this happens when you deal with an institution. This problem does come up. And it is then that conflict develops inside. When you see, you should never allow a conflict to build up inside. If conflict develops, then it's a problem. Then you are fighting in this conflict, you are involved. When you know something is right, that you are in your conscience tells you that this is the right thing to do. If your conscience is clear, because often it's not the conscience that is dictating. Conscience means Krishna from inside, with support of the Shastram. That is conscience. Samskaram is different. Samskaram is what you have acquired from this world, with the modes of nature, what you have created. So these two things, if they conflict each other, then there is a crisis inside. The person will have a crisis inside. Then you have to get on with this, constantly thinking, am I doing the right thing? That's why, especially in spiritual life, we shouldn't allow conflict to develop. In material life, yes, it will always develop. You can't do anything. But it's not so important. Because material life is all centered around money and position and things like that. It doesn't matter. Whether you get it, you don't get it. If you get it, fine. If you don't get it, you can leave it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect you. But in spiritual life, if you allow this to happen, then it is a problem. Because it will haunt you till the end. This conflict, what develops inside. That is why sometimes if you deviate from the instructions, and if you depend on the society and community to tell you what is the right thing to do, and if you follow with that, then conflict will come eventually. And you will regret about that thing later. So that is why in these issues, particularly matters related to spiritual life, Shastram and Krishna's words and the great authorities, great acharyas, what they have spoken must be the bottom line. Nothing else. Nothing else. So Krishna is saying here that, for example, how this samskaram develops. Just for example, that everything in the world we see like this. See, somebody is coming running from there. So immediately that picture is in my mind. Intelligence worked and started interpreting that. Interpret says to me that it is a dog which is coming down from there. And as soon as intelligence tells me it's a dog, immediately my reaction is, oh, it's coming to bite someone. Because it's a dog. Dog's nature is to bite like that. It's not controlled by anyone. So who says to me this? The false ego inside is telling me that. And my attachment to the body straight away develops, and I want to shelter myself, so I climb onto a tree or climb onto a wall to escape from the dog. So, or otherwise, I feel to shelter myself, I take a stone to throw it at the dog to protect myself. So body started acting. That why, how did I get this information about the dog? Because when you were a child, some senior members, father, mother, someone has told you, be careful with the dog, not to play with the dog. Dog is a, you can't trust the dog. Dogs can be harmful. So that samskaram which has gone in, that vritti, what has been spoken to you, that has been lying there after so many years of experience, that has become very strong, that samskaram, the fear of dog. So it's become a samskaram inside. And immediately it has acted. And that showed me it is a dog. And it is keeping this samskaram inside is all our dealings with the world, outside world. So, if we understand this secret, Krishna is pointing out in the next verse, that's what you're coming to now. Krishna is pointing out, if you understand this secret, Krishna says, we have got the mechanism how to come out of this problem. How to come out of this problem. Sri Narada Maharshi, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Svabhava Vijayo Dhridhi. Dhridhi is a word he has used there. if you win over your own swabhavam, this is your nature. This is samskaram, what we call it as. We say about people different things, isn't it? Some people, oh, that's his nature, we say. It is his nature. So what is his nature? That is swabhavam. And winning over your own nature is called dhridhi. Dhridhi is the quality. Krishna will talk about this. Srinarada Maharshi will also talk about this. This thing called dhridhi. It is in the Ekadasha Skandam later. Then, swabhava means what? Actually, it is the character, isn't it, of a person. That, or the inner profile of a person. Inner profile of a person. Everyone has that. Everybody has their own character, isn't it? But we say, oh, he's a character, we say like that. We are also characters. We are not different. Everyone is a character in this world. Nobody is excluded from that. Every single one is a character. So what does that mean? It means everyone has a particular swabhavam inside. That it is an important thing to know. Why? How to change this character. It's not an easy thing, isn't it? How to change this character. And from now onwards, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is bringing very subtle things to us to explain that in realizing the soul, what all is standing as a block in our way. That's the main thing what Krishna is pointing, bringing it out now. So he says there that, first of all, he explains how this swabhavam develops in a person. How the vritti starts, becomes a vritti develops into asana, and then at that time it gets life, and then it becomes a samskaram inside a person. So once the samskaram is developed, that becomes his character. In English we call it his character, or his inner profile, or whatever way we refer to it. So it becomes like that. So all this is happening, Krishna is saying that because you are dealing with the world with emotions inside, vigaram, isn't it? With vigaram you are acting. And then it becomes a chittavritti, and then it becomes a samskaram. First it is a vikaram. Vikaram means an emotion, a particular emotion develops inside. And then it becomes a vritti and then a samskaram. You know what I'm saying? That the vikaram is the first thing. For example, when you see something, depending on your inside thoughts, you develop a particular reaction to that situation, isn't it? Either a hate or a love or a liking, disliking, all kinds of things develops inside. So, first thing Krishna says that, what should you do? Krishna says, with extreme care, that not to allow any samskaram to build up inside. That does not mean to become uncultured. Not so what Krishna is saying. Not to develop any kind of samskaram inside, because it's constantly drawing a picture inside and it is influencing us, that all our karma is influencing us in this direction. Therefore, all the Vedantists will say like this: if you engage in karma, karma will create vigaram. Karma will definitely create, any karma for that matter, will create vigaram inside. Vigaram means this excitement inside a person. So if it is like that, one has to experience the after effect of that. The after effect cannot be taken off. So this karma is a very big trap. It's a big trap it is. Why? Some people say, if that is the case, I won't do any karma. They'll say, like, I will not do any karma, because the karma is going to be dangerous. But the first thing is, they know that once you execute any karma, the immediate reaction is desire for the results. Isn't it? Phalecha. Phalecha is the first desire, because you want some results from the karma. Therefore, I'm not doing any karma. Vedantis, some people will say like this: I'm not doing any karma, because if I engage in karma, the desire for results will come from that. If you don't do any karma, what will happen? That that's what Krishna is going to say in the next few verses. If you don't do any karma, then all the vasanas that is inside, it will lie there. all the vasanas inside, that will lie there. It will not come out. Whether you do it or you don't do it, still it is a very difficult situation. If you don't do it, what is inside will not go. Will not go. If you do it, it will create new ones. If you do it, it will create new ones. If you don't do any karmam, the vasanas inside won't go. So that is why in Shastram, you can see in Bhagavad Gita, out of the five major topics discussed, one of the important one is karmam. The sages have known these things in such subtle level that they were able to identify the problem with our existence in this world, and they found the main thing is this thing called karma. It's only in the Vedic philosophy karma is given so much importance. You won't find this elsewhere. Karma has been given so much importance because karma is the thing that is keeping this body. Krishna even said to the extent the sun is there and the moon is there because of their karma. He says to such an extent karma has been given the importance. So how to cut out of this? And Krishna says, gives the answer to that problem in three words: yogam, karmasu, kaushalam. That's the answer. Yoga, karmasu, kaushalam. This word in the Bhagavad Gita is very popular. Can you imagine? Yoga, karmasu, kaushalam. And because of the power of these three words, there are in India, in several companies, in their logo they put this, yoga karmasu kaushalam. Whether the man who has used the logo, he understands or not, I don't know. But in the logo you find this, yoga karmasu kaushalam. It's such a very... Krishna is... Kaushalam means kushalada. Kushalada, why that word kushalada? Kushalada means this darbha grass, which is used... This is where this word is coming from. If you understand the origin of the word, you will know why Krishna has used that word. Darbha grass is the grass used for sacrifices. So in the olden days, brahmachari boys from the ashram, they have to go and collect this darbha grass from the forest for performing the sacrifices. At the brahmanas perform the sacrifices for this, they need the darbha grass. Kusha grass it's called, kusha grass. So when this kusha grass has got a lot of thorns and also it's very a razor-like edge it has got. So when you pluck this kusha grass, you can get easily hurt and blood will come out from your fingers, people. So there is a technique by which you pull the grass out without getting injured in the fingers, right? It's a very sharp edge it has got, the grass, kusha grass. So you will see this in the Bhagavatam. Ajamila went to collect kusha grass for his parents to perform this sacrifice. If you see this sixth canto. So, when you collect this, there is a technique by which you pull this kusha grass and cut it off. And that is how this word kaushalam came. The word kaushalam came from that. How to pull the kusha grass carefully. The word kaushalam. Krishna says, there is a technique by which you can escape from this karma. And that is called yogam. Yogam, karmasu, kaushalam. Krishna says in three words, he summarized everything to Arjuna. That completely to give up karma and run away from karma is foolishness, Krishna says. Whichever field we are in, whatever karma we are doing, we have to do it properly. But the secret is, Krishna saying, in which way you should do it, in such a way you should do it that the karma should not affect you. That is the secret. And that is what Krishna is saying here in the next words. Krishna told Arjuna, you fight the war. You fight the war. Take the Gandivam. When Arjuna started looking at Krishna at that point, when Krishna told Arjuna to fight and to take the Gandivam and to fight, so at that time Krishna understood that Arjuna is not clear in his mind what he has been saying about it. So it was then that this next verse was spoken to Arjuna. That was verse number 38. 38. Yeah. So that's where, because in the last verse Krishna said about this Yuddhaya Kradanishchaya, get up and fight, he said, isn't it? So Arjuna looked still unconvinced about it. So Krishna says to him that Sukha Dukkha Same Kritva Labha Labhau Jaya Jayau Tato Yuddhaya Yujyasya Naivam Papam Avapsyasi. Again, Sukha Dukkha Same Kritva Labha Labhau Jaya Jayau Tato Yuddhaya Yujyasva Naivam Papam Avapsyasi. Translation, that do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing you shall never incur sin. Pretty difficult, isn't it? Not sufficiently convincing, isn't it? When you say to somebody, look, first you tell anyone, don't worry about the results, just do the work, do the job. Suppose the employer comes and tells you, don't talk about the salary, do your work. How will you feel? How will you feel? And especially they have given a raise to everybody else in the office, a good raise, a good bonus, everything. And to you, he says to you, well, Bhagavad Gita says this, that don't talk about the raising money. So that's why we have to understand these verses properly. Otherwise, we will have a lot of problems in life, especially when in the working world, when you have to work and you are spending your time there, giving your life and energy to somebody, and you expect the results from there to come, and the results don't come, you're not going to sit quiet about that, isn't it? So it is a situation in life we all of us are dealing with. So this is why Bhagavad Gita has to come to our life. It's not spoken only to Arjuna, this verse. It's addressing us, actually. So if you understand this verse properly, Sukha-dukkha samekritva labha-labhau jaya-jayau Tatho yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsyasi. Krishna has used the accurate word papam there. Papam avapsyasi. He says if you fight like this, there won't be any sinful reaction from that karma. There won't be any sinful reaction from that karma. Otherwise, karma is sinful. Karma will bind you. That itself is the sin. That it is going to bind us. Isn't it? Karma vasana and strong people who have no idea about karma, they are not bothered. They are willing to accept the results, whatever comes, good or bad. Majority of the people in this world act on that level, isn't it? But because in the Vedic culture it's much more subtle and it's a little bit more deeper understanding of life, we take serious note of karma. Even in Bhagavad Gita, if you look, as soon as this chapter is over, Krishna talks about karma yoga, isn't it? First karma. No other literature, spiritual literature, gives so much importance to karma, like Bhagavad Gita has given. Starting from second chapter, in the second chapter itself, Krishna begins about karma. Second chapter, third chapter, fourth chapter, fifth chapter, sixth chapter, all about karma. The first six chapters are referring to karma. Next six are reference to bhakti, and the other six are reference to jnanam. This is how Bhagavad Gita is, three sections in the Bhagavad Gita. So if six chapters, that too the first six chapters, if Krishna has to speak about karma, there must be something very serious importance attached to it, isn't it? Otherwise, why in a battlefield Krishna has to talk about karma to such a level? Just shows that there is a science behind karma, and Krishna is speaking from a very, very subtle level. Everything is spoken here. So the subtlety of all that has to be understood about karma. And later on, when you come to the fourth or fifth chapter, Krishna will say this also, that Gahana Karmano Gadi, how karma brings results, even very highly learned people, they cannot understand the way karma work. Karma affects us, Gahanam. It is so deep. Krishna says this. Gahana Karmano Gadi. The Gadi of Karmam, nobody understands. It is so complicated. There are so many verses later on referring to karma. Krishna talks about that. So here, in this particular verse, Krishna says, fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing, you shall never incur sin. Fine, Krishna said the absolute statement, it is from Krishna. Let's look at it, why Krishna has spoken that way. What is the reason behind it? That is most important. That Krishna wants to tell us the secret of happiness in life. He wants to reveal it to us. The secret of happiness, how to be peaceful within. And later on Krishna will say, happiness is not important, shanti is more important. Undisturbed nature. Because if you allow the mind to get withdrawn into all kinds of excitement, emotions and controversies and all kinds of things, you have no peace, no shanti. Krishna gives importance to shanti more than any other happiness. Ashandasya kuta sukham. He says, when there is no shanti, there is no happiness either. So Krishna says here, we have got two kinds of emotions in us. It is called in the Shastram Dvandvam. Dvandvam. Dvandvam means the duality of the dualistic process. It is Dvandvam. And Dvandvam means, Krishna is saying, Sukham Dukham, which means happiness and distress. What does Sukham means? Happiness means, if there is something giving me satisfaction for my senses and for my body, that is happiness. Anything when we deal with this world, if something is satisfying my senses and my mind and my body, I accept it as sukham, isn't it? Or in other words, if I was expecting some result from my action and that result was according to my expectations, then it is sukham. Happiness inside, isn't it? For some people, something is sukham and something is dukham. It is happiness for someone. For example, company declared 5% bonus. A person who is little satisfied with it, you know, who doesn't have much ambitions, he considers 5% bonus I got, I'm more than happy about that, he will say. But someone who is very extravagant in his expenditure, and who has a big outgoings and big expenditure, he says, what this company has done? I worked so hard, they gave me only 5% bonus. Isn't it? So the same thing, 5% bonus, has become, one person is very happy with that, oh, I've got at least 5% in these difficult times, at least management has given us 5%. They will say like this, isn't it? In the office, you come across all these scenarios, different kind of situations. This is all happening. Why I'm talking about the office? Because it's the workplace. So many people are working in an office. So in the same office, you will see one person is feeling satisfied. Another person makes a comment saying that, well, this is useless, this place. In the last company, I got 30%, I got 40%, and this place is useless, 5% they can't afford, and they're grumbling about it. All sorts of remarks people will make like this. So Krishna is saying here that the same thing is creating one emotion in one person and another emotion in another person. So, this is an important thing, this verse, because if this verse you understood properly, Krishna is saying there will be peace inside. The peace formula, Krishna is clear explaining to us how it will happen. You know that for people who are living very comfortable in their life, yeah, very comfortable in their life, they got everything material, they are well off, yeah, a little disturbance is enough, they get upset about it, isn't it? They get upset about it. Say for example, share market, right? If you invest a lot of money in shares and stocks, when it crumbles you cry, isn't it? A man who has no money in the stock market, he's got a few pounds in the bank account, he's not bothered. He says, what does it matter if the share market goes up or down? What does it matter? He says. So, one thing is happening in this world, because it's not affecting him, this person who has no investment in the stocks and shares, he doesn't bother. Another person, he has invested heavily in that, he cannot sleep at night thinking that, oh, the shares have dropped so much, and goes up to the extent of even giving up the life, isn't it? We have seen that in history. It happens many times. Similarly, you know, so many things are happening all the time, isn't it? When you read newspaper, you find all these things. That somebody who starts a big banking, and people invested all their assets, all their wealth into that man's, because he was offering a very high percentage of interest, isn't it? Remember recently there was few cases like that, it happened, yeah. So what happens after that? The bank went bust. Yeah, Northern Rock like thing. Situation happens. And he has gone. And this whole people who have invested in that account, they are saying that, I've trusted him so much, I never thought this will happen. Then they interview these press people, make it up also a lot. They go and interview these people and they come out saying that, we had a lot of doubts about this person before. So, but nobody knew anything when this was going to happen. And some people have invested millions in these big accounts. And in, what do they call it, in Bahamas they had the account, and the Channel Islands, the accounts were open, and all kinds of things. Rich people have to do these things, isn't it, to protect their... Because protecting wealth is more difficult than creating wealth. A lot of people create wealth, but then to keep that in that same state is very difficult. It's more difficult to keep that strength of the wealth what they have earned, isn't it? So when wealth goes away, they feel upset about it. But an ordinary person who is not have that all these kind of things, he has got very small income, he lives on that. He says, what does it matter? It happens to so many people. He is able to totally relax about it, isn't it? So this difference, why does that happen? This is the question Krishna is asking there. That, you know, this, there's a famous book Kalidas has written. Kalidas was the greatest poet in Sanskrit literature. And he is still the greatest poet from the Vedic point of view. Kalidas has been as a special mercy given to him by Kali. Kali has given that, so he became Kalidas. There's a story about that. Anyway, the literature he has created is the topmost literature. Great poet, great philosopher, everything. So he wrote a book called Shakuntalam. That's a story, famous book known as Shakuntalam. In the Shakuntalam, it's a story from the Puranas. All the books what Kalidas has written are the subjects taken from Puranas and written in a Kavyam. Kavyam means big poem. It has been written like that. So Shakuntalam is the story of King Dushyanta and Shakuntala. Vishwamitra Maharshi, a great sage, he performed severe penances to become a develop the what do they call as the Brahma Tejas. Brahma Tejas means to achieve this strength like Vasishtha. Vasishtha and Vishwamitra were competing each other. So Vishwamitra Maharshi performed penances, and in the penances, when it became very severe, very intense, he was a very powerful, he was a king who became a sage later. Rajarshi he was. So Vishwamitra Maharshi performed severe penances, and Indra got frightened that why this king is performing such strong penances. So he sends Menaka, one of the Apsaras women, to disturb his concentration on the inside. So Menaka comes, and Vishwamitra fell into that trap. From that relationship, a girl was born, and she is called Shakuntala. Shakuntala is a girl who was born from that relationship. And Menaka, after the purpose for which she was sent, the job has been completed, she went back to the heavenly planets again. Vishwamitra Maharshi also left her, this little baby girl, there. And he also went away feeling very guilt that he fell down like this. Instead of, he came with a very intense purpose of executing strong, severe penances. But he didn't make it, so he felt bad about it. He also left her and went away. It so happened, this girl who was lying in the forest, she was located by a great sage called Kannu Maharshi. Kannu Maharshi saw this girl, took this little girl to his ashram and brought her up there. brought her up in the ashram. When the girl grew up there, after 16, 17 years, when she has come to the, of age, what happened was the king came there for hunting to the forest. She was very beautiful, born from an apsaras woman, and came from a great king as well, sage as well. So by providence, this girl met the king in the forest. Dushyanta met this girl Shakuntala. And Shakuntala became pregnant in that relationship. Dushyanta went back to the palace. So Shakuntala's children, in Shakuntalam's story, what it happens there is that Kanu Maharshi, Dushyanta promised that he will go back to the palace and take Shakuntala to the palace later. But when Dushyanta went there, he forgotten about it. It so happened like that, for some reasons. So in order to remind Dushyanta, Kanu Maharshi sent two boys, Brahmachari boys from the ashram, to Dushyanta's palace. Right? Dushyanta's palace, he sent two Brahmachari boys. So when the Brahmachari boys went there, when they went to the palace, they couldn't adjust with the situation there. Palace was so opulent and the comforts there was phenomenal. Nobody could believe it that Dushyanta had such a luxurious lifestyle. Kshatriya king, isn't it? So the boys went there and they just wanted to get out of that place as quickly as possible, to deliver the message and come out from there quickly. They were so much affected by the opulence of the palace. You know how Kalidas puts it in his poem in Shakuntalam, what he says? He says, you went to Ganga River to bathe. After bathing, you felt yourself very purified, isn't it? You feel very purified, clear, cleaned up everything inside, outside. You feel, you bathe in Ganga, so it means inside pure, outside pure. Then you have to walk through one of the gullies in Banaras where it's very filthy and dirty. So when you walk through that small street, the little street bar you're walking through, how you feel a little kind of disgust with the, oh, I'm getting dirty. You feel a kind of inside, you feel a certain uneasiness, isn't it, while you're walking through. I want to get out of this place as quickly as possible. Apparently these two brahmacharis who were sent by Kanu Maharshi to the palace, they also felt exactly the same thing. Like the way a person after bathing in Ganga River, when he comes through the streets, which is very dirty, how they felt. Similarly, the boys also felt exactly the same thing inside. So Kalidas says here that they felt very frustrated about this. And that luxury in the palace was distress for them, for the brahmacharis. Brahmacharis were used to the peaceful and serene surroundings of the Kanu Maharshi's ashram, simple life and higher thoughts inside, isn't it? Ashram life means simple living, very simple, very clean and pure, at the same time free from all kinds of anxieties of the luxurious lifestyle in the palace. And on the other hand, the thoughts are very high, isn't it? Simple living and higher thinking. This is what happens in the ashram. In the palace, what happens? All luxury, everything offered, as much as you want to enjoy, but spiritually not much of a higher consciousness there. Though, so they didn't like it. For them, it is distress. For somebody else, it's happiness, isn't it? The same life in the palace is happiness for someone, and for them, it is a distress. So, similarly, if you take a person from the palace and take him to the ashram and leave him there, what will happen to him? He will also feel that it is a distress for him, isn't it? He will find the other way. So what does that mean? That means one person who came from an ashram to the palace, he stayed there and he found unbearable the situation. You took another person from the palace to the ashram and he also found it unbearable there, in the other place. So what it means that whatever you accept with your mind, Krishna is talking about what is happiness and distress. Whatever that you accept with your mind, it is happiness. Whatever you reject, it is misery. So, the palace and the ashram, nothing has changed there. But for two people, why did they feel the difference? Because their mind has accepted something, mind has rejected something. It is the mind that has played the role there, not the object. Not the object is the same. Stays there one way, stays there another way. So, that in other words, what I like is, it gives me happiness. What I like, it gives me happiness. What I don't like, it is, that is distress. Krishna says here, if you have understood this, you have found out the secret of the happiness and distress. If you have understood this point, that happiness and distress is not in the object. This is the most important thing. Happiness and distress is not in the object. It is based on the samskaram you are seeing the world. And whichever samskaram you have inside, the brahmacharis from the ashram had that the brahmachari samskaram inside. So when they seen through that, this mind rejected the palace life. Similarly, the person from the palace, he had that samskaram from the palace. Luxurious life, comforts, happiness, sense enjoyment, everything. Through that samskaram, he is seeing the ashram. And he rejected ashram because of that. It is distress for him. Isn't it? So you can see how the mind interprets things to you and tell you this is happiness and this is distress. Because mind, if you remember, Krishna has spoken about this before, in relationship with the modes of nature. The three modes of material nature comes into play here. And mind, where does the modes of nature stay in a person? In the mind and the intelligence. That's where. It's not on the soul. Soul has nothing to do with the modes of nature. Modes of nature is only in the mind and the intelligence. So if your mind and intelligence is in the lower modes of nature, you will find it very difficult to accept the austerities and the lifestyle of the ashrama, of the temple or the ashram. But if your mind's of modes of nature is in the goodness, then you will find happiness when you go inside the temple. You'll find happiness in the temple. And similarly for the others also, if your mind's of modes of nature is in the lower modes, when you go to a 5-star hotel, you feel happy. I got to the right place. Now, why? Your modes of nature is like that. That's why you are feeling happy in the 5-star hotel. Other 5-star hotel has nothing to offer. When we travel, we also notice that, isn't it? When you go to a 5-star hotel or good comforts, facilities, everything, we feel happy. Ah, everything is fine here. It is nothing there fine. But fine is only because the modes of nature inside is telling me. My mind is accepting it without any resistance. On the other hand, we have gone there to see a sage or somebody. And we go and see the sage, he is living there in a cave. He has no bed to sleep. He is sleeping on a stone or something. He is eating some fruits. He has no regular diet even. And he has all his clothes are very torn and he is very simple. He lives there. You tell him, come and stay in the 5-star, I'll pay for it. He says, no, I'm not coming. I'm happy here, he will say to you. Isn't it? We will tell the sage, look, why you are struggling here like this? Why don't you come at least for a couple of days, enjoy the 5-star comforts? He will say, no, I don't want to come there. He says, so why it is like that? We think that 5-star means everything is fantastic there. Everything is comfortable. And then we have come here to see that sage who is living in that condition. So there must be something inside we give importance to that sage's life, isn't it? In other words, even after the 5-star facility, there is some dissatisfaction inside. Isn't it? There's some dissatisfaction inside. Whereas for the sage, he doesn't have the 5-star facility, but he has more satisfaction than us. So Krishna says, if you have understood all these things, then you have got the secret behind it. That whether you like it or not, that is the secret of happiness and distress, whether you like it or not. Sometimes one person dies, another person feels the separation very strongly. A third person says it's good that he died and gone because he was suffering so much. Why should he stay like this in this body for a long time? So he is happy that he has left. This happens in family life also. You can see sometimes one person gets very old and very sick, right? And some of his friends come to visit him. Friends has to come only once in a way to visit him, isn't it? They come visit and then they go. And then they, when person dies, oh, he says, oh, sad that he died. They'll make a remark like that, isn't it? They go for the funeral and they make a remark like this. But the family members who had to look after this person for a very long period of time and seeing the suffering, misery he is going through, they say that why should he suffer like this? So long he has been suffering like this. It's better that he leaves his body and go. So this one person dies, two people see in two different ways the same thing, isn't it? So, so Krishna is saying here, there's only two things in the world, dvandvam. This is why it's called dvandvam. What is that? Happiness or distress. Happiness or distress. There is no other thing. Either it is happiness or it is distress. So, and our life is controlled by dvandvam, this duality. It is controlled by duality. What do we need all the time? Happiness. That's what we are looking for, isn't it? And what else we want? We don't want distress to come. This is our life in this world, isn't it? We want happiness to come. We don't want distress to come here. So, both we are particular about it, isn't it? Sukhaya dukha mochaya bhavati. He says, sukham and dukham, when you are released from both, then you are in actual happiness. Krishna is saying this. Yeah. So, all the work what we are doing here in this world is for these two things. What's that? To get sukham, happiness, and not the distress, not to come. So this is the goal behind it here. Yeah? And we insist on these things, isn't it? This is what we consider as our goal. So that happiness comes always and distress don't come. This is the main key thing what we have in our head in a very subtle level. It is embedded in us, in every activity what we do. We want happiness to come, and we want no distress to come. So, what Krishna says here is that the control on this is not in your hands. The control on that is not in your hands. What we think should not come, will come. It's also the beauty of the life. What we think should not happen, will happen. And what should not come, it will come. It will come. Sometimes it happens like that, isn't it? Just like in the business, isn't it? Profit and loss. This is also duality only. Profit and loss. Nobody does business for loss, do they? Everybody does business for profit, to make profit in this world. So, similarly, in a competition also, nobody wants to lose. Everyone wants to win. So, success or failure. Two things. Either you have success or you have failure. Everybody wants to be successful. Nobody wants to fail. Everybody wants to make profit, nobody wants to lose. Everyone wants to be happy, nobody wants to be in distress. So Krishna is slowly making us understand the point, what he is trying to tell us. That in this verse is this, that sugham dukham means happiness and distress. Labham nashtam, which means profit and loss. Jayam parajayam, success or failure. Krishna says, that these are the things when one we accept and one we reject out of these two, each of these, isn't it? Each of these pair, one we accept and one we reject also. The one we want, when we get it, we feel satisfaction inside. And when we don't get it, we feel dissatisfaction. When you take a meal, when you are hungry, if you take a meal, that you feel satisfaction inside, isn't it? And what happens? The hunger goes away. The hunger goes away. These are very subtle things. Only if you hear and think about this, you will feel how our instincts drive us in this world, instead of seeing from a logical way, like Krishna puts it here. So, when you have hunger, you eat food, and then you feel a relief from the hunger. So, hunger is a disease. So, similarly, when you ate the meal, the hunger went away. Hunger went away. You came to a balanced state, isn't it? You got a balanced state. So, when the hunger goes away, you felt satisfaction, happiness. So, sukham, dukham, two things. Dukham is the negative state. Sukham is the positive state. Because of distress, desires come. Because of distress, desires come. When the money came, the desire has gone away. we thought from money I will get happiness. From money I will get happiness. Krishna says, if you get rid of this ignorance from a person, that from duality, that means if you start this business of picking one from the two out of the duality, that is called ajnanam, ignorance. He says, if you remove this ajnanam from a person, then then he is in peace all the time. He is in peace all the time. That means how to come out of this duality. This is the main thing Krishna is saying here. You don't have to change anything in this world outside. The change is required inside us. That means sukham dukham, how not to pick sukham and not to reject dukham. Jayam parajayam, out not to pick success and to leave failure. Profit and loss, how not to look for profit and leave the loss. If a person has come to understand this properly, that the duality is how they work and where the happiness is coming from, Krishna is saying here, if you just remove this ignorance from a person, then he will come to peace. He will be in peace. Nothing has to be changed outside in the world. That's the point. So whatever happens in the outside world, inside, if his state of mind is like this, in peaceful, then whatever crisis develops in life, he will not move from that. This is spiritual life, actually. This is actually spiritual life. Spiritual life is this. Spiritual life is not getting excited about anything and reacting to it strongly. That's only showing that this verse has not been understood properly. Whatever situation happens in life which gives you happiness, if your inside is not moving, that means you are in perfection. Purnada. Purnada means perfection inside. So, example given that the ocean doesn't get dried up no matter how heavy the summer is, how hot the summer is. The ocean never gets dried up. Similarly, no matter how heavily it rains, the ocean never overflows, isn't it? So this quality of ocean is important in spiritual life. That means there is a perfection inside a person. The person is complete inside. That is why he is not reacting to any situation. Sukham dukham, profit loss, or success or failure. If his inside is perfect, if his inside is complete, Krishna says here that it will not disturb him. And that is known as Yogasthiti. Krishna talked about Yoga Karma Sukaushalam. That Yogasthiti is this state, or Samasthiti, they call it. Samasthiti. Sama means equal nature. That happiness is coming, is able to take it. Distress is coming, is able to take it in the same equal level, unaffected inside. Externally, when you look at it, one is a profit, one is a loss. One is a success, one is a failure. But inside the person, if he is able to take it on an equal level, Krishna says it is Yogasthiti. That is yoga Krishna is referring to. That is the only thing that will bring... Mind has got... Remember, we talked about two states. Samasthiti, Vishamasthiti. Samasthiti is this state, Purnada. Purnada means perfection inside. Vishamasthiti is that state when you are always in the disturbed state, vibration inside, heavy vibrations inside. So equilibrium state is the samasthiti, right? So Krishna is saying here in this verse, Sukham dukham same kritva, labhav labhav jaya jayo. If you are able to stay in all these conditions, when the mind does not get affected by anything, that is yogasthiti. If it is like that, naivam papam avapsesi, there is no sinful reaction from that state. There's no sinful reactions will come from that. Why is like that? Sukham dukham, we are looking at it and comparing it between happiness and distress, isn't it? How it brings happiness and distress. But if you have learned how to see it on an equal level, Krishna says there that that the result of a particular activity, that is what is causing this problem inside. That just like he says example that sometimes, that you know, you can also see this when you're working in an office, because that's where all these things are happening, isn't it? Working in an office, so when you have to deal with people and you have to deal with your working life, that there this will come very strongly, that we are looking, what is in it for me? What do I gain from this, by doing this work for somebody? What do I get? I'm getting there every morning, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock. I spend all my life and time for somebody. And if I'm not getting anything from that, what's the benefit? What's the point in me doing this work? So here, Krishna has told Arjuna that without consideration of all these things, fight this war. Isn't it? That's what Krishna has told Arjuna. That if you fight like that, or if we develop this attitude in life, Krishna says, eternally nobody can beat you. Nobody can beat you. You are only looking at it from a lower level. This profit and loss, success and failure, and happiness and distress, this is seeing things from a, not from a spiritual level, completely from a material level. Krishna says, there is a story about this in Yoga Vasishtam. In Yoga Vasishtam, the story is like this, that there were three demons. There were three demons. And demigods were finding it very difficult to beat them. Demigods were finding it very difficult to... They fought a lot. They couldn't win against these three demons. So the demigods went out to the Lord, to Vishnu, and asked him, what is the secret that we are unable to fight these people, these three demons? So Vishnu says to them, I'll tell you the secret why you can't beat them. Reason is, they have no false ego inside. One, they don't have any false ego. And they're also not thinking about happiness or distress either. No false ego inside, no happiness or distress. Not only that, they are not even particular whether they should live or die. The mind is so balanced inside, so you are going and fighting with them, but they don't have any of these things there. So therefore, they can fight like a machine. Machine has no feelings, isn't it? Emotions inside. If you are inside, you have this desire, I have to win this and I have to... if it is strong inside, it becomes very difficult. That's the point Krishna is making here also. That nothing can, they never feel fatigue. These demons never feel fatigue, any point. That if you want to make them, if you want them to lose, if you want to win over them, I will tell you the secret what you have to do. And Vishnu tells the demigods what they should do first in order to beat these demons. What was the secret Vishnu told them? Vishnu told them that you go fight with them and then in the middle you run away from them. While running away, you tell them that you are much more stronger than us. We can't fight you like this. If you keep saying this few times, what will happen is their false ego will wake up inside. And once the false ego builds up inside, then they will lose. Right now, they don't have the false ego. They're not fighting the battle, thinking that we want to win or we either lose or win, doesn't matter. Whether we live or die, doesn't matter. There is no false ego inside. Just like a machine, they are fighting. Whenever you go to fight them. Therefore, they are not losing the battle. They are able to fight the battle all the way through. So, unless you create some false ego inside, and false ego means what? You have to make them feel that they are superior than you. So, every time you run away from them, from the battle, you make this statement to them that you are stronger than us. We can't fight you. Much more stronger. Keep on injecting this idea into their head. Up to this time, they never thought about this. So, you say like this and run away and tell them that how powerful you are. Make this, put this point to them. And then they will call you then at that time to fight again. And at that time, continued this. After some time, what happened was, these demons started thinking that they are powerful. And they also started that nobody can beat us. So in other words, the false ego has become very, very strong. What does that mean? The individuality has developed very strongly inside. Individuality has vyakti bodham. It is called individuality develops inside. So when they started thinking that we have to win, then they lost it. When they started, we have to win, they lost it. So in the Bhagavadam, this is pointed out very nicely in a story of Vritrasura. If you remember, Vritrasura was fighting with Indra, isn't it? In order to kill Vritrasura, Indra had to go and pray to Dadiji, and from Dadiji he had got this thunderbolt, with which he made this thunderbolt. And with this he is fighting Vritrasura. And Vritrasura's mood was that I don't care whether I win or lose. This was no false ego inside. He was a devotee before. Listen, Chitrakedu has come as Vritrasura. So inside, Vritrasura is thinking that it doesn't matter whether I win or lose, I'm going back to Krishna. That was his mood all the time. And Indra fought and fought and fought. He couldn't win the battle with Vritrasura. Eventually, only when Vritrasura allowed Indra to win, then Indra won the battle. Not before than that. So, there are those verses. And Vritrasura says there, I'm not bothered about whether I lose this or whether I die. Liberation doesn't matter. That was the mood of Vritrasura. Na naka prashtam, na japarameshtam, na sarvabhaumam, na rasadibhatyam, na yoga siddhi, abhinarbhavam va, samanjasatva virahayakankshe. That's the first verse from Vritrasura saying to Indra. And Indra was puzzled. Na naka prashtam, if you offer me your office or your position to me, I'm not interested. Vritrasura saying to Indra. So Indra is thinking that he thought one day Vritrasura will take control of him. Of heavenly planets, isn't it? Indralokam, Indra's planet. That was Vritrasura's fear inside. Sorry, Indra's fear. So Indra is saying to him, and Vritrasura is replying, Na naka prashtam, I'm not interested in your position. Na cha parameshtam, even Brahmalokam, if he's offered to me, is not interested. Na sarvabhaumam, not the emperor of the world. Na rasadivatyam, rasadala planet's authority, I'm not interested. Na yoga siddhi, I'm not looking for any yogi mystic powers. Abhunarbhavam va, even if I have to take birth again, I'm not bothered. Samanjasatva virahayagangshe. So, Vritrasura's mood was such, Indra couldn't do anything about it. And Indra is expressing that what do I do now? So, he can see that Vritrasura's approach was such that Indra couldn't touch him. At the end, Vritrasura decided, because his purva smriti came back, I was this devotee Chitraketu. And I had this mercy of Srinarada Maharshi and Lord Balaram, Sankarshnamurti, isn't it? So I want to get that back again. And when that thought came, he completely forgot he was in the battlefield. He started remembering about Krishna and the life he led before as a devotee. So all that blissful experience came back to him. And he said, I want to leave this body. And then he tells Indra, now you can apply your thunderbolt, Vajrayudham, on my stomach, cut this through and get inside. That is how Vritrasura swallowed Indra inside at that point. And Indra went inside, cut open his stomach and came out from Vritrasura's belly. Isn't it? He came out like this. In the Bhagavatam you can read the story in the sixth canto. So till this consciousness inside one up to that point, Vajrayudham, even with Vajrayudham, Indra could not win this battle with Vritrasura. Only Vritrasura's attitude was such. But when Vritrasura decided that he wants to go back to spiritual world, he took Indra inside and told Indra, now you cut open from inside. So Vritrasura was a very powerful, big, huge demon. Indra was finding it difficult to beat him. So Vijayat Manyamana, and Vritrasura spoke like this, and all these things, physical or psychic, he has no desires inside, neither physical desires or any psychic desires inside. So neither on a bodily level or on a mental level. Therefore, they could not defeat him. Eventually, he gave up everything. Manam, avamanam, that means his glories or his insult, nothing bothered him. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna that keep these things away from inside. That means that if you win the war, you will be glorified. If you lose the war, you will feel insulted. This manam, avamanam, that is manam and avamanam, isn't it? Manam means to be honored, and avamanam means to be insulted. So honor and insult, that also should be free from your mind, because these are working in a subtle level in Arjuna's mind. Suppose I lose the battle, what will happen? Suppose I win the battle, what will happen? So Krishna is telling Arjuna, both these things you should keep away from inside. That means I will win or I will lose, what will happen? These things has to go from inside. And if in that mood, if you fight this battle, Krishna says here, that you are complete. You are complete. That Purnada, that means this complete perfection is not in the world outside. It's only inside us, in individual. You can reach perfection inside us, in the consciousness. Purnada is possible. As we discussed before many times, it is not possible to be perfect in the body. It's not possible to be perfect in the world outside. That is not possible. By the very nature of creation is like that. It is not possible to be perfect in the bodily level, but it is possible to be perfect on a spiritual level. Krishna's point is this, that if you have raised yourself to the spiritual platform, you can be perfect. And spiritual platform is like this. Sukha dukkha samaya kratva labha labho jaya jayo. Tadha manabha maneyo. Manam avamanam labham nashtam jayam parajayam sukham dukham. All these things don't matter. You are perfect at that state. But if you have come down to this lower level, then you are not perfect. It is not possible. So, example is like this, that when your perfection is misunderstood all the time in life, isn't it? We are trying to create perfection in our dealings in this world. And unless we come out of these dualities, Krishna says it is not possible to become peaceful in life. So secret of peaceful life is freedom from dundvam, freedom from duality. We must recognize dualities of this world. We must also recognize what dualities does to us in our inside, in our dealings with this world, happiness and distress, how it comes and where is this thing called happiness and distress. It is not in the object, it is in the person. It is in the person, happiness and distress, not in the object. But somehow or the other, we are completely in the misunderstanding that happiness is in the object. That is why we are running after the object, isn't it? Many advanced devotees, jnanis, you will see, this is why they were able to withdraw from the material life. Because they are completely convinced inside, happiness is not in the object. It's a higher state of existence, higher understanding of life, that happiness is not in the world outside. Happiness is not in the world outside. We may always ask this question, so how should I live in this world? That's another question. But the truth is this, that happiness is not in the object. Happiness is inside. How your mind takes it, that's what's more important than anything else. So, just like he says, like that sometimes, you see, people, they are sleeping in an air-conditioned room with the best bed. He's not getting sleep. He's not getting sleep. And some other person, he's sleeping on the street, rough, and he's sleeping very comfortably. He's getting good sleep. He has no problem. So why is that? What's that causing this? He says here, both are equally ignorant. Remember that. this person who is sleeping in the AC room with a comfortable bed, and the person who is sleeping in the outside, in the street, rough, sleeping rough, he is also ignorant, this person is also ignorant. But, in other words, this sukham or happiness is a thing inside. It's a thing inside. who decides this, he will get that happiness. Whoever decides this, happiness is a thing inside, he will get happiness. But if he thinks happiness is in the object outside, he will never become happy. He will never become happy. This is the secret Krishna is telling us. That as long as in our all our activities, if we are totally dependent on the objects outside, sense objects outside, we will eventually be defeated. We will eventually be defeated. That we, if you put all your faith in the world outside, you put all your faith in the world outside, eventually you will be defeated. And this is the, Krishna is giving us a very important message. Very, very important. Why? Say we live in family life. We have got wife, children, parents and many others in the family. Emotionally, they are all, we get attached to each other also in relationships. Isn't it? We get attached to it. Suddenly they leave. Suddenly one of them leaves due to different reasons. And at that time we feel very distressed about it. Oh, so-and-so has left me. Sometimes people feel that very much, isn't it? After long relationships also. That's one state. Krishna says, if you don't want to suffer, if this perfection is inside, you won't suffer. If the perfection is inside, you won't suffer. Another example, you got a lot of wealth. And if all the wealth leaves you one day, due to whatever circumstances happens in this world, you will be in serious distress. Yajnavalkya mentioned this to Maitreyi. Yajnavalkya says to Maitreyi, if you see anything different from the soul separately, then you are inviting trouble. You are inviting trouble. In other words, if a husband sees the wife, or the wife sees the husband as a different from the soul, in other words, identification with the body, then there will be trouble. There will be trouble. So in other words, the fundamental principles, you can't find any flaw with it. Fundamental principles are correct. If you look, use your intelligence and logic, you can see Krishna's logic and it makes everything justified. Isn't it? It is correct. These things are correct. Purnada or perfection is inside us, not outside. Isn't it? We can't find anything perfect in this world. It's not possible to make it perfect. So rather the right thing to do is to keep the inside peaceful by not accepting dualities. Not accepting dualities. Rejecting the duality. Not to select between sukham and dukkham, happiness and distress, and success and failure, profit and loss. In all these kind of situations, if the mind is responding in the same way, that means there is peace inside, happiness inside. This is the secret Krishna is talking about. So here, then, a brahmachari, particularly, that's when the education begins for a person, when one's mind is absorbed in Brahman, that is who is called a brahmachari, isn't it? Brahmajanaditi brahmachari. So, one whose mind is totally focused on a thing which never gets destroyed, which is that what it is, it is the Brahman, isn't it? And then he holds on to that. He never falls from that. If we also won't fall, if we hold on to that. In other words, who is dependent on Krishna in life, who is dependent on Krishna, and if he is totally dependent on him, then these things won't happen. This, in other words, he will be able to keep that peace within, equilibrium inside. If you hold on to something which is very firmly fixed, very rigid, then the chances are that you will escape. But if you are to which you are anchored, if that is also shaking, then your survival is very rare. Survival is not very good in that situation. So that is the point. That is why Krishna talked before, Nityam Sarvagada Sthanu Achalam Sanatana, the nature of the soul he spoke before, isn't it? For this reason only. that soul by nature has nityam. Nityam means really a strong anchor it has got. Sarvagada, sthanu, achalam, sanatanam. These are qualities only in relationship with the soul. So Krishna is saying here that if you want to have that perfection inside, purnada, purnada means the perfection inside, we should be anchored to the soul, not to the sense objects, to the body, to the mind. These will all eventually pull you down because they are not perfect in itself and they can never be perfect unless we are anchored to the soul. So knowing the soul and finding happiness in the soul, Krishna is saying here that is the secret of the peace inside. Dvaidam is there. You cannot reject. The dualities of the world will be there. And mind will always create duality inside. The mind will create that duality inside. Good, bad, dharmam, adharmam, heat, cold. And because of this, you see how this dvandvam works is a very subtle thing also. Sometimes people will come and ask this question. You may have come across, and many of us also have the same question. Something happens in life, right? We ask this question, is it my fate that this has happened? Or could I have avoided this if I have put some effort into it? Isn't it? Could I have come out of this? Will this not have happened if I had put some effort into it? This question always there, isn't it? We all ask this question at some point or another in life. So, the answer to that question, in spiritual life, particularly when people first have not understood the subtle side of spiritual life, people who have not understood the subtle side of spiritual life, when they have hundreds of questions, right? When they will write questions one after the other. And if I answer all those questions, then they will say, okay, you're telling the right thing. If you're not answering the questions, then they say, well, your understanding is not right, they'll say. But we don't approach spiritual life in that way. We accept first that sages and Krishna has a higher understanding of life than us. That we have to recognize first. We shouldn't test Krishna's knowledge and this Rishi's knowledge and then scrutinize it and then accept it. If you go that route, you won't get there. That won't make it. First, we have to recognize that Krishna is talking to us on a much higher level, on a very subtle level and a higher level. Same conclusion of the sages also. That does not mean that you can't ask questions, but this understanding should be there. So, people come and ask this question. Is because they have doubt about this. When we talk about prarabdham, this question will always come. Oh, you're always telling about prarabdha karma, I'm suffering like this. If you keep talking this prarabdham, nothing is going to happen in life. What will happen to me? That if I don't work hard, and if everything is fate, 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 if you keep repeating destiny, 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 what will happen one day? The whole country has gone to dogs, that's what they say in India. Whole country has gone to dogs, because everybody is talking about destiny, and vidhi, vidhi, they say like this, isn't it? It's not like that. This is ignorance. This is lack of understanding things properly. That they are seeing life completely on a different level. Yeah, completely on a gross level. Their understanding is that the material body, if you try, you can make it perfect. Krishna is saying to us, it can never be perfect under any circumstances, no matter how hard you try. So, when you go with these questions to realize to people, with this question, that destiny or my effort, what's more important? They will say, videha prayatnasya saddarshanam. Whether it is vidhi, or it is fate, or it is my effort, if you ask that question, they will say to you, this is coming from ignorance. This is coming from ignorance, because there is duality in you, you have trained your mind in this way, in dual nature. Sukham dukham, labham nashtam, jayam parajayam, success failure. This is how you have conditioned yourself. Because you have conditioned like that, everything in the world you will see like this. Nothing, no other way you can't see it. Krishna is saying, you change your way of looking at things. Try to see that they don't disturb your inside. If you develop that attitude in life, Krishna says, this ignorance of destiny or the your effort, that will also go away from a person. Because ultimately, Krishna says here, who is getting the destiny? Whose destiny? My destiny, isn't it? It is mine. And who has to work? I have to work. But who is I? Who is this I? That itself is the false ego you are referring to. Isn't it? That means when you fall from the spiritual platform, Krishna is explaining to us what all problems we are creating in life because of our fall from the spiritual world to the material world. Spiritual world and material world is only this one only that we are talking about. We think spiritual world is somewhere else, material world is here. We go there, everything will be perfect. It's not like that. Spiritual world is also equally here. The spiritual world is right now here. And if all this consciousness is developed inside, we are in the spiritual world. We don't have to travel millions of miles to get there then. So, in other words, Krishna's point is this. In second chapter, this is what he's stressing on this point. That sukha dukkha samaye kritva labha labha jaya jaya. Then he says here that in that consciousness, if you are living in this world without this false ego, because false ego doesn't have any real existence. It's something we have created, our own. Soul doesn't have a false ego. False ego has come from ignorance, isn't it? Ignorance is the cause of false ego. And it's from false ego all these things have developed. Dualities have come. And you are accepting duality. Based on that, you are making some judgment on that. The very root cause of all thing is the false ego. From everything is originated. So from false ego, the mind has developed. Mind started accepting something, rejecting something. That's the nature of the mind. And something you call it as happiness, something you call it as distress. That's again your mind is making that decision. In real terms, there is neither happiness nor distress. Strictly speaking, they don't exist either. So all these things, this is why I'm coming back to that original thing when we started the class today. I mentioned that in the same way, kamam, krotham, lobham, moham, madam, malsaryam, all these things, the mind and the world has created together. In relationship with the soul, they don't exist. When you fall from the spiritual understanding, realize the state, to the conditioned state, all these things have come into existence. The only thing what is existing, the truth, is only the soul. Nothing else exists in reality. So that is why in Upanishads also it will say that After realizing the truth, when full realization happens, you see that it's only the soul exists, nothing else exists in this whole creation. This is all the products of illusion and the mind, what it has come from that. The mind will create all the dualities and play with us, with our mind. Mind will create the dualities and suffer from that. Sukham, dukham, and happiness, distress, profit, loss, success, failure. All this is all the game that the mind is playing. We have to escape from this. And what is the way to escape? The escape is, instead of standing in the two, you have to stand in one. Instead of duality, you have to accept the transcendental nature of the inside, that purnada. That I will stand in this one condition. I won't allow myself to tilt in either direction. Because people, then they will ask the question, what's the point in working? If I'm not getting any happiness and enjoyment in this world, what's the point in working? That will be the first question. Why? Because they have not come to a spiritual platform. They are very much on a material platform. This question is coming from. Then that these emotions are developing inside. But if you recognize this point, that there is some unchanging truth behind the mind, which is the soul. If that takes control, then profit, loss, happiness, distress, success, failure will not happen. And identification with that means, I'm only a witness to everything. I'm only a witness to everything. Remember in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we talked about the two birds. The bird which is a witness don't suffer. Why? Witness is in this consciousness. the witness is in this consciousness. Witness never suffers. This is how witness got out of the trouble. The jiva, the bird, Atmanamanyam jasa veda vidvan apipalado nadupipalada, isn't it? So apipalada, who is not eating the fruit and who is not disturbed by the dualities, he is perfect. He is always in peace. He is a witness, isn't it? He is a witness. Whereas the other bird, jiva, who is eating the fruit and who is in the duality, accepting and rejecting the happiness and distress that's coming from that, he is always in distress. So, the only solution, Krishna is saying here, that to move on to that consciousness of the bird, which is a witness, which is actually situated, there is no other way. Otherwise, dualities will continuously disturb us. So, if you act in that way, Krishna says, with this understanding, there is no sinful reaction. This is the solution to the problem. Because that papam, what Krishna has mentioned in that verse, isn't it? Sukha dukkha samekritva labha labha jaya jayo tadha yuddhaya yujyasya naivam papam avapsyasi. That by so doing you shall not incur any sin. So, it's a very important verse. At the same time, that papam, because why papam? Because when the dualities are happening, you are accepting something as happiness and distress, immediately kartrutvam has come there. I am the doer. Isn't it? So you can see from all these examples what we are talking about, that when you don't have kartrutva buddhi, kartrutva buddhi means I am the doer in your dealings with the world. I am not the doer. And I am not the enjoyer. If it is there, this dvandvam won't disturb you. Won't disturb us, isn't it? The dualities are disturbing. Why? Because the kartrutva buddhi is there. I am the doer is inside very much, strongly. So, in one, Lord Krishna is asking us to free ourselves from this understanding that duality is the problem. Perfection is only on a spiritual platform, not otherwise. As long as we identify with the soul, and the false ego is not inside a person, once the false ego goes, all these things goes away. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer goes. Attachment, aversion goes. Duality, happiness and distress goes. And profit and loss goes. Success and failure goes. And there is perfect peace inside. Perfection of the peace inside. What Krishna is saying at that point. He says that. So, pāpam, or sinful activities, definition, he says like this, that the whole creation is running under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. Under Krishna's control, everything is running. And if we recognize this fact, this great power, Krishna's power, is running this show, and I am not somebody who is separate from that. I am also part of that. In this big project, what Krishna is running, I am a part of that project. But when I start thinking I am doing something, then immediately the false ego comes up from that point. False ego comes up at that point. When I start thinking I am separate from this whole project, what Krishna is running, I am separate from that, and immediately the false ego builds up inside, and thinking that I am the doer. And that is what Krishna calls as the sinful thing. Sinful thing. Because of that sinful thought inside, that I am the doer, I get punished. Because of the thought that I am the doer, I get punished. Krishna says like that. That always, that is, whenever that false ego develops inside, Krishna says it is distress. It is distress. Then you have to pay for it, he says. That the bhalam, or the results, will be that you'll have to experience the results also. So, karmam, because of kartrutva buddhi, or I am the doer, the pious results and the sinful results one has to experience. And Krishna refers to this sinful thing, what he refers to is this kartratva. I am the doer. I am the doer. So this verse is spoken in relationship to eliminate this thought from inside, I am the doer. If I am the doer, that goes away from inside, Krishna says your mind is perfect, all disturbances will go from inside and you will be able to act properly in this world. Then, I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, I'm not intelligence, I'm not the senses. With that understanding, if you operate, he says, then kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam will leave you. That is when that will leave you. That means, if I act in this world with the understanding that I'm not this body, not the mind, not the intelligence, and in that consciousness, if I operate in this world, Krishna says, this kartrutvam and bhoktrutva buddhi will also leave you at that point. And because the mind identifies with various things, all these things are happening. Once you leave that, it will not happen again. Naivam papam avapsyasi. Otherwise, it is punyam and papam. So what Krishna is pointing out, the important thing here is, pious activity, sinful activity, or punyam and papam, is only up to the limit as long as you identify with it. You see the point? That once you have come out of this identification with any kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam, punyam bhavam has no meaning after that. Isn't it? Dharmavyada story we were discussing yesterday. Dharmavyada has come to the state. He is not thinking anymore, he is the doer. So although he is doing a very abominable job from a material point of view as a butcher, he was not affected by that. Why? Kartrutva buddhi is not there. I am the doer. Completely freed from that. Why? He has withdrawn from all the dualities. If the profit loss, desire is not there in his action. Nobody is glorifying a butcher, isn't it? Oh, you have done a good job today. Nobody glorifies. He is not bothered about that either. So, jayam, parajayam is not there. Success, failure is not there. Happiness, distress is not there. So, nothing is there. He is just doing it because traditionally we have done that, I am doing it. That's all. Nothing more than that. So Krishna's point here is this, that if in that consciousness, if activities are performed, then there is no pavam, there is no punyam either. And that's the state Krishna wants us to understand, that samastiti, then that is purnada, perfection, naivam pavam avapsyasi. Krishna says in that state, there is no sinful reaction to it if one acts on that platform. And the finest example for this is Krishna himself. The finest example is Krishna himself. If you start looking at Krishna's activities, he should have been in the prison by the time he was 8 or 10 years old. Amount of crimes he has committed, isn't it? What do they call juvenile? He should have been that, because the stealing he has done, the thieving what he has committed, and all the activities he has performed, he should have been in prison by then. Never went to school, went did all these kind of things. So everything he did like that. If you go into a later life in life also, how he dealt with others, if you look at it, you will see exactly the same thing. Krishna's activities. Yeah. The success of that was that Krishna's, of course, being the Supreme Lord, is always in this state. Nothing affects him. Nothing affects him. Why? Ownership is not there. People read Puranams, yeah, and they see all sorts of things happening in the Puranas, isn't it? Lord Shiva drank this poison, Kalahalam, Kalahuda poison he drank at the time of churning the ocean of milk, isn't it? People ask and then Lord Ramachandra worships Lord Shiva at another point in Rameshwaram after coming back from the battle with Ravana. So when they see these dealings between between these personalities like Ramachandra and Krishna, Krishna is worshipping Shiva, Shiva is worshipping Krishna. When they see all these things, people start thinking, who is higher, who is lower? They start judging like this. Actually, higher and lower is one who is in dualities, isn't it? For Krishna and Shiva is not thinking, I am better than you or you are better than me. They don't talk to each other like this, like the way we talk in this world. So you can see, when we don't have spiritual understanding, even Shastram becomes a problem for us. We start analyzing Shastram through our mind, with our dualities, isn't it? Krishna fought with Shiva, isn't it, in Banasura story. They're fighting. Krishna and Shiva were fighting. And then we are seeing, who is winning now? Whoever is winning will take his side. this is our mind. He's telling us this. And then we tell, because of this, how much problems, you know. This is how Vaishnavism, Shaivism all came up like this. One saying, my God is powerful than your God. Your God is powerful than my God. The other person is saying. And like everybody start fighting like in this world. And gods are saying, why you fools are fighting each other on our name? On our name we are fighting here. On his name we are fighting here. Yeah, they are not fighting. We are fighting on their behalf here, each other. This is how various religions came up and various kinds of isms developed from that, isn't it? This is all religion, all this fight that goes on. Spiritual understanding is, Shastram is telling us, free from all these things, that consciousness in identification with the soul is spiritual life. That is spiritual consciousness. When that consciousness is complete, Krishna is saying here, nothing will happen. Nothing can touch you at that point if you operate in this Krishna consciousness. That Krishna says, the example is that Krishna has done so much in this world, to this world. Has any one person thanked him for that? Not one. He gave us Bhagavad Gita, he gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. Has anyone thanked him for that? For giving us this knowledge? Nobody thanked him. What have we done to him? Gandhari cursed him. Gandhari cursed Krishna. And was Krishna affected by any of these things? Whether we glorified him or not glorified him, whether we cursed him or not cursed him, doesn't matter. Krishna is equal in all this, because all this doesn't mean anything to Krishna. That state of mind, that state of vision which Krishna had was like this. Why? Understood the soul, what the soul is, soul's position. So it was then that Krishna is saying in that verse, Sukham Dukham, seeing equally and not being disturbed in the profit and loss, and understanding that the objects outside is not happiness and distress, and these are all the reactions of the mind, and in that case one can understand the truth. Krishna is saying like this. So Krishna's point is that the in order to win this battle in spiritual life, in order to come to the spiritual platform, this is a basic requirement to free oneself from the duality. We may argue against it, saying that how can you do that in this world and all that. That is our ignorance. You can't blame Krishna for that. That's the ignorance in us, which is telling us that you can't do this, you can't do that. That's because we aren't looking for excuses. But Krishna is saying that if you come out of these things, that perfection will, peace will come inside. When the peace is inside, the knowledge will start coming of the soul. How to bring us closer to the soul? How to take us closer to the soul? That's what Krishna is doing here through these instructions. And this is the first instruction in that route. What is that? Coming out of the dualities. Sukha-dukkha samekratva, labha-labhav jaya-jayav. Then, tadho yuddhaya yujasya. Naivam papam avapsisi. The word used is papam. Papam means, if we continue to live in this way, we are living now, thinking about happiness and distress and under the control of the modes of nature and the dualities, Krishna says, you will incur sin and you have to suffer. There is no way of freeing yourself from that. So these things may not be practical immediately to happen in life. But if this knowledge stays inside, it will come helpful at some point when we have to deal with this world. Because constantly we are more in executing karma in this world. And that is why the knowledge is not taking any strength. Whereas somebody who is practicing this knowledge seriously in life, he will not get moved by the influences of the world, by the dualities of this world. Isn't it? And this is a first step. Krishna is talking in the second chapter that in our progression towards spiritual life and the soul, first thing is to free ourselves from the duality. That you will notice in great jnanis, great devotees. You see, in their life there is no excitement. You know that. For us who are working in this world, earning money or some lot of sense enjoyment, when you go on a nice holiday, you come back, I had a great holiday, we say. Isn't it? Great holiday. Why? So much sense enjoyment I had. Or I get a lot of money, won the jackpot. I feel, oh, great, everything is fantastic. Isn't it smashing? We say all sorts of things, we say, in that happiness mood. When some misery comes to us, some illness or something happens, we immediately cry. We think, oh, why this has come to me? I chanted so many rounds, I did this, I did that. All kinds of argument starts at that point. But in Mahatma's life, is there any happiness like this? Nothing. Every day is the same for them. Every day is the same. One day is not different than the other day. Every single day, they are in this balanced state. They have learned how to become balanced in life. That is the peace in them. And it is this balanced state that releases that knowledge from inside. Knowledge of the soul will come out. In the unbalanced state, the soul's potencies, like the eternity, blissful knowledge, all these things will not manifest in a person. This is the point Krishna is making here. So first, he says to us, come out of this duality. It's the first step in that way. Material life is important, but material life is not that important compared to this issue, what Krishna is talking about. We have given importance to material life. So therefore, keeping that in the forefront, we are judging Krishna's words. And that's where things are going wrong. If you have given seriousness and importance to Krishna's words and understand that material life is only that much importance, then you should be able to apply this understanding to our life in this world. We'll discuss tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.